Well, here we are, my friend, Borud, in what is pretty impressive setup we got going here. It is for the people that are just listening to this on the audio podcast, this might not play well, but we are launching a little video along with things here. Mm-hmm. And we have spent way too much time decking out the pod studio and turning it into a television studio here. Look at this.
These walls were blank.
Yes.
2 days ago.
Well, no, they weren't completely blank. They had just like photos of me playing basketball. Yeah, it was a shrine to me.
It was a regular room 2 days ago, and now it's a pod studio.
Look at this. I mean, you look at the background stuff for both of us. I mean, you got your Costner, Bull Durham game right. I got Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt.
So
I got Kobe Bryant, Tiger Woods, LeBron James. You got Hall & Oates, Van Morrison, Eric Clapton. There's a contrasting.
This tells the story of two people.
It does.
Half, my half, and that's what's so fun about it.
Who are you? That's a good way to figure out who you really are as a person.
Yeah.
If you had to set up a podcast studio, what would you have in it? That's actually like the best first date icebreaker. Like if you want to get to know someone, be like, okay, so hypothetically speaking, if we were to go on a date, what would you put in your podcast studio?
One wall. Who are you?
Who are you? Right. I would say this is I've known you your entire life. What I'm looking at is a pretty good representation of who you are. Is this a pretty good representation of who I am?
It's not far off.
It's not far off. We were talking beforehand though, Costner. So it goes Paul Newman, Kevin Costner, Tom Cruise.
No, I don't think Cruise makes top five.
How dare you?
But Cruise is good.
Cruise doesn't make your top five.
Well, I'm saying top five favorites. No, I mean,
really?
But Cruise movie. I mean, I take Tom Hanks over Tom Cruise.
His catalog of movies.
Yes.
Right.
Talking about movies, our favorite movies. And
but you go Paul Newman one.
Paul Newman one.
Costner two?
Probably Costner.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're going to get to Nebraska football here, people, in a second.
Forget about Nebraska football. We got to talk about Kevin Costner. No, I mean, if you take Costner from 87 to 94 or 96, it's like,
whoa.
I mean, every movie he came out with.
What's his best movie? Field of Dreams?
Field of Dreams and Bull Durham are his top couple, but he's got all his movies are very, very watchable to me. Like if it's a Sunday and I'm just like, I want to watch something and then falls, I will watch Kevin Costner movies over and over.
Okay, because it was funny. I was explaining that to my wife because she, of course, looked at that and was like, what is that? And I was like, it's Bull Durham, it's Costner.
She was calling this the Beaver.
She was calling it the Caddyshack Gopher a Beaver.
Move the Beaver.
She didn't know who Jim Brown was. She's like, can we move that football player? Like, that football player.
I go, that the greatest football player of all time guy on the wall? And she's like...
I was trying to think of like top Costner movies. And like I went after Field of Dreams. I'm not sure what my next favorite. I like all Costner movies, but I'm not totally sure.
So Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
I think
Bull Durham, Bodyguard.
Tin Cup. He's got a bunch of those movies that are really good, but not your favorites. But like think of like Untouchables.
Right.
You know, A Perfect World. Even how many times have you watched Waterworld?
That's true.
Waterworld's not one of his best movies, but I think people watch Waterworld 100 times and act like they don't like it.
That's true.
But you watch it 100
times.
That's
true.
Right?
That's true. I was trying to explain to my wife like how your catalog and hierarchy of
And Costner did For Love of the Game, which is one of the most underrated sports movies.
He's done a lot of sports movies.
Well, he's a baseball guy. He's
really good. Clearly.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Field of Dreams thing on Fox? That's pretty cool.
Pretty amazing. I mean, that was one of those that I remember hearing about. It was supposed to happen, I think, last year and then got postponed. Yeah. But man, if I could rewind and say, could I have a ticket to one sporting event? That would probably be, I wish I could have been there.
Greg McDermott and his dad went to the game because they grew up in Cascade, Iowa. Yeah. That's like, just a couple of miles down the road. So Coach McDermott was like doing some begging And so he was at the game, but that was amazing.
Oh, it is amazing. I've actually read the book. The original book is called Shoeless Joe Goes. It's like, I mean, I've always, that movie's like up there, like all times for me. So
did you rent it at the library?
I have before. Actually, I own it now. You still give me crap.
I do. Although Mava got a library card because she saw some Bubble Guppies episode about a library. She wanted a library card. So if you, the next time you go to the library, if you'd swing by and pick up Mava and you two could go to the library, she would be a happy, happy little girl.
She's learning.
Okay? She's learning some things. Okay. Speaking of learning some things, this is the grandioso big Nebraska football season preview podcast here. Because we're taping this. It's August 24th. It's Tuesday. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we're just a couple of days away from toe meeting leather in Champaign, Illinois for year four of Scott Frost to get rolling. So this is going to be kind of like an all-encompassing preview to the season. Yes. But I wanted to start with this because one of the things that is interesting to me is like usually the off-season has a way of like Kool-Aid starts to get chugged. Angst and tension subsides a little bit. And then by the time the season comes, it's all good feelings. Everybody's excited. Everybody's optimistic, right?
Yeah.
This feels like this offseason has kind of added pressure to this. And if you think about it, so it's been, I kind of went in sequential order. Things that have just added to a little bit of spice to this season. Skipping a bowl game became like a hot topic. Mm-hmm. Wandale Robinson, Luke McCaffrey leave. Transfer. You have the Oklahoma game debacle of trying to move off that game. All that. You have Bill Moose's sudden retirement in June. You have Trev Alberts then being hired as athletic director. And then, oh, by the way, 2 weeks before the season starts, you have the bombshell from Brett McMurphy. Not really a bombshell. I mean, these NCAA violations are like jaywalking, you know, like they're like, nothing.
This just in, Nebraska has coaches.
but nevertheless, there is an active NCAA investigation into improper use of analysts or whatever. I mean, seriously, it's jaywalking at this point, but. Yeah. Give me your read on the situation on kind of how it feel like the pressure and the tension has gone up as opposed to going down throughout the offseason?
I think when you tie all those moments together, you kind of go, okay, yeah, there has been quite a few sort of like,
a lot's happened.
Yeah. A lot's happened. But I do think there's been a subtle, shift that I don't know if you've noticed in the media where maybe the criticism has picked up.
Yeah.
Just even in the last
month. The willingness to go there.
Yes. So even in the last month, I can feel the media sort of saying like, we're running out of, I don't know if it's sympathy or we're going to stop pulling our punches. And I've noticed that, especially as like, the season's coming and it seems like things are going well in camp.
Like, yeah, it's been a good camp. Yeah. That's what's unfortunate. It seems like it's been a great camp.
No major injuries. There's usually one or two that you go, oh man, this is bad, but no major injuries and things are looking up from the football standpoint, but the media, I think, I don't know, maybe they've just been stewing in it and it's sort of just coming out now, but
I could see that.
It's kind of odd that it wasn't all off season. It's like gradually they're just getting there or something.
But it's just interesting because usually there's the circle of life for a football season for Nebraska is, you know, like season plays out. There's always a bunch of crazy storylines. The season ends. There's usually some people are stressed about things, but then Christmas comes, spring football comes, Kool-Aid pitchers start to get tossed around. By the time this time of year comes, everybody's feeling pretty good. And it just seems like there's been a lot of things that have happened that there was already a lot of pressure on this season because of the fact that first 3 years, 12 and 20, we all know all that stuff. But it just, to me, it's interesting. Like in order to digest the season, I think you got to get a sense of what things are like heading into it. And it's just interesting.
Yeah. I think there's the way the media feels, though, there's a lot of conversations going on between friends. I actually was talking to somebody in the gym this morning and Jim Talk.
Need a spot, 225, by the way.
By the way,
who's going to be the running back? You like run game? Is that what it was?
Kind of.
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
like him and his group of friends were talking and like a couple of in the group had just kind of started to go negative. Right. And that's the stuff that, that's where we're at, right?
Right.
Like it's groups of friends are sort of, they're half and half. Some are still optimistic. The other half are totally pessimistic. And that, I think, is shown in the media, where the media is starting to go that way too.
It just feels like this season is about earning everyone's trust and patience back.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this season's necessarily about winning the Big Ten West or anything like that. I don't know if anybody is saying, like, it has to be that or it's a failure. People just want a reason to fully believe, invest, trust again.
Yeah.
And, but it's just an interesting way to frame the year heading into it, just because, again, usually that's not how the cycle goes. Usually as the season gets closer, people start chugging the Kool-Aid, you know?
Absolutely.
With all that said, so we're going to do a full kind of offensive side of the ball preview, defense, and then kind of get into the big questions. We have our five most important Huskers. I wrote down my five. I'm going to have you react to them. And then we'll do a game-by-game prediction. Okay. But I wanted to kind of start with this big picture thought. I feel like I am higher on this team and more optimistic about this team than a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And the main reason why is I am going to rest in and be all in on experience. You have tons of experience on defense. You have, what, 9 starters back. You have a bunch of super seniors coming back. You have a fourth-year starting quarterback who has a lot of experience. Oh, by the way, also has a lot of talent. I get it, has had a lot of shortcomings with decision-making and all those stuff, but 4-year starter quarterback, tons of experience on defense. Like, I am going to really lean on those two things as we kind of like go through the season preview and all that. Like, I'm a little higher on this team than I think a lot of other people are.
To me personally, this team being sort of undervalued right now by the fan base and by the national media, I think is a good thing for this team. Like, to everyone having these low expectations gives them an opportunity to like to overachieve in this moment. Right. Yep. So just like you know, you feel this way. I feel the same way. I think that this is by far their most talented, experienced team. And they're in a good position because they're being underestimated. They can overachieve.
Right.
So this is a good situation. Now the big downside is it's a freaking hard schedule.
Right. And there's a big game to get things started that kind of sets the tone for the entire season that will. Well, I guess I want to go there real quick. You had, but what the difference is, you were a senior in 2007. It felt like everyone put too much on that USC game. Yes. And then when that USC game didn't go well, you really can kind of point to that moment to when things started to so kind of unravel. But what's weird is, I feel like the players really circled USC for being a big game. I don't know, like, does it feel like, it maybe feels like the fans and the media are putting a lot on this Illinois game. I don't know if the players feel it like that. Does that make sense? Like, did you, because I imagine you felt it in 2007 when the USC game was coming.
Yeah, so USC, they were the number one team in the country.
Right. So it's not apples to apples, but I'm just talking about, generally speaking, if you put too much into one game, that can be dangerous.
I think where they might compare is they were the sort of benchmark game in the sense of, you want to know where you're at as a program? We were trying to make some sort of jump from being like, okay, we kept, you know, almost, we almost won the Big 12.
You were in the Big 12 championship game.
The year before,
6 months prior to that,
we were making progress, and this was our moment of like, hey, are we going to take a jump? And we found out like we're a lot farther away from where we thought we were to where we really are.
Right.
Right? That was in 2007. Now, I think this Illinois game, like, they're not one of the best 10 teams we're even going to play. There's 10 other teams that might be better on this schedule. Right.
Right.
So they're one of the worst teams we're going to be playing, but we lost to them last year. And we want to know, where is our program at? And that's the tricky part about this game. It's not that they're one of the best teams. It's that we want to know that we are better than Illinois right now.
Right.
That's what it's all about. Like, right. Can we win this game that we pretty much should win if we just do things right? we're the better team, I think, talent-wise, would be my guess. Oh, so yeah. We should win this game. So that's what's so hard about it. It's more of a benchmark game than it's like, I mean, Oklahoma, that's a bigger game, a harder opponent. But this is more important because it's a benchmark game. And obviously it gives us the chance to go 3-0, which we have not done.
Have not won 3 in a row.
This is the start to the 3-0, which that would buy them breathing room this year.
So, right. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, but okay. So let's dive into the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts with Martinez. Let's start the conversation there. Been somewhat of not a polarizing figure, but to a certain extent, it'd been an interesting player to assess and digest throughout his career. Mm-hmm. There's the talk that he's trimmed down, he's slimmed down, he's in a great place physically, he's in a great place mentally. I guess, what do you expect from him this year?
What do I expect? I don't know what I expect. What I hope.
Okay, look at you.
Hope. Yeah. So what I hope.
Yeah.
Is that the progress he can make with taking care of the ball. Really, that's it. I mean, taking care of the ball and making the easy plays he needs to make. That's all I hope to see is if he does those things. I think bigger things will probably come, but I'm not expecting him to do it all. What I hope is that he grows in those areas. And I think our team will go a long way, just managing the game a little bit better, holding on to the ball and making some of the easy throws he needs to make and complete. That right there will do wonders for this offense.
Right. I think and again, this is where I feel like I've been Mr. Make Excuses for Martinez, but it feels like all these other things are going to impact that. Like the better the run game is from the running back spot, the less he has to probably carry the ball, which the less opportunities to fumble, the better the wide receivers are, the more open guys are going to be, the better the special teams are, the better field position is going to be, which changes the dynamic of just how your confidence, where you're taking the ball, starting to drive at. So I think, not to take all of it off of him, but he needs other things to come together for him to not, I think all those shortcomings bring out his shortcomings, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a great point because we have to acknowledge that this guy has been working with an empty cupboard of weapons, right?
So
he's had two seasons now where he really hasn't been able to get the ball to people that just make plays and make it easy on him. It's been hard. We've had to really manufacture with the right play call or running him too much and just putting a lot on him instead of just hey, we got a big guy. Just throw it up. He can make a catch. Or, we just got guys you can get the ball to that will get yards.
Right.
One of your favorite terms, yak.
Yak, baby.
Getting yak.
Yak it up.
Gotta get some yak.
Right.
And the big simplifier is running backs. Give the ball to running back. Play action game. We haven't had it.
But I just view, it's funny, you talk to certain people and they'll bring up Adrian Martinez as a reason not to believe in this team in this season. I'm the complete other way around. I point to him as a reason why Nebraska, and it doesn't even have to, some people, it was funny, I was playing in a golf scramble two weeks ago, and people love to point out well, if Martinez goes down, this season's going to go down the crapper. I think there's a big drop off after Martinez, but that's not I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't point to him as a reason for optimism because of the lack of what's behind him. I point to him as a reason for optimism because I still think the guy, there's a good player in there. It's somewhere in there,
Nick.
It's somewhere in there.
You sent me a video maybe 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
What was that video?
It was the highlights of Martinez's first game against Colorado as a freshman.
And what did you see?
A good fucking player, man. Right? I mean,
those were great highlights.
Fast. He was dropping dimes. He was looking decisive. You're just like, wow. I urge everybody, if you can, go find highlights from that game and you'll go, oh, that's why we chugged the Martinez Kool-Aid.
I mean, he knew less. He was less familiar with this offense.
Right.
But he was pulling the trigger. He was either, I mean, he was just going for it. Like, he wasn't thinking he was playing, and he looked really, really good. Now, this, that game and the way he ended that season put him in the top five of the next year's Heisman race before the season started. That's what we forget, right? That's the thing people forget, is like, he was looked at like that.
Yes.
And now people make their comments. I'm still telling you, like, if this were a stock market, and right now, whatever Martinez's stock is at, I'm buying, because I know it's undervalued. I would buy that stock, and even an average season, you're getting your gains. Because that dude, even if he plays like his average, is still a good player.
Right.
Now, if he ever plays to his full potential, then you're seeing those Colorado highlights all season long. That's the potential there. So for me, like, I'm buying Adrian Martinez stock right now when it's low.
Oh, me too. I'm high on the guy. There is no doubt that, like, he's got a, like, it's his fourth year. He's played a lot of football. Like, he's got to understand what can't happen in a given play, and maybe not take as many risks or whatever. Like, he's got to cut out all that stuff. I think he can. I think some of that hinges on what else is happening around him, but I feel good about him. Real quick, before we go to the running backs, I'm going to knock on wood. Martinez goes down. Harburg, Smothers, who comes in?
I'm going to the SS. Heine?
You're going with the Heine guy?
The Heine!
I'm going Heine. Does it matter? Okay.
I still don't know that I've seen Smothers throw a pass.
I feel like Smothers is like this tall.
Smothers is on the team. We're like, is he? Where's Smothers? Has anyone seen him throw? Like, hey, he's thrown. He throws a lot. I'm telling you, he throws.
He's doing good. Has he been in practice? You're like, what? Nick?
Let's call Sip. Like, Sip.
Sip.
Like, is he throwing a pass? Sip, like, I don't know.
I don't know. I was at Applebee's and I didn't see it. But hold on. Are you only getting your, does it matter if the scenario, like, if, is there a difference? I mean, like, Martinez goes down and, like, he's going to be down for a stretch of games versus down for a quarter, or, like, you know what I mean? Are you getting your Heine game right no matter what?
Whoever knows and can at least execute the offense a little bit, even if, like, Smothers comes in, he's, like, going to run it a lot. I just think Heine, our boy Heine, is a true freshman.
But he's Heine, though.
Nick, hey, get your hands off me.
I'm starting to sweat. I'm in the Budweiser hot seat here.
We got
the spotlights are getting us here. I just love the idea that no one can confirm Smothers has been at practice or thrown a ball. Nick,
we need confirmation. Anybody on the ground that has eyes on the ground.
I feel like right now I can close my eyes and picture Heinrich Harburg's face. I can't picture Smothers' face. Like, I feel like he's not a real person.
I think he had a mustache for a while. So
did he? He was getting a stash on one of those guys?
Okay, that's fine. Incognito.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's in witness protection right now. So yeah, grow a mustache. They won't ever expect anything with that. But I'm with you. I'm getting my Heine game right.
Yeah.
Just because I think he's got more. You got to be able to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. Running back. Arguably the most important position that needs to improve. And I could make a case the season somewhat hinges on somebody emerging at that spot as a legitimate player. I was joking on one of my last pods. It's funny how we reference and talk about Stanley Morgan and Divino Zigbo as if they're Irving Fryer and Mike Rozier. Like, we're like, man, if we just had Morgan and Zigbo, it's like both those guys didn't even get drafted. They were good. Don't get me wrong. But, like, Zigbo was, like, okay.
I mean, people should say if only we had Amir Abdullah. Like talk about Rex, Amir.
Right.
Like, guys that are
but that's my
another
point.
Level. Those guys are it's a different level.
But that's my point, though, that, like, people would kill for Divino Zigbo right now. And Zigbo,
he was third string, I think, for
his whole career until
even,
the end.
I think even he didn't start
Greg Bell.
The season.
Remember the Greg Bell was here, and then Greg Bell.
3-4 games in, Zigbo sort of, like, came in. He had some good games, and he emerged, and he really had a good season. But, like, he couldn't get on the field for his whole career here.
So I guess that the reason I bring it up is that kind of indicates where this position's at. Is you would kill for a guy that was a third stringer his whole career, didn't even start his final year, and then did be played well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's not playing on Sundays.
No, and we need a guy to come in and just be a guy. And you don't even have to be Amir or Rex or Micro Zero. We do need Ozigbo-ish talent, which is just, it's just good enough.
Right? I haven't seen a run since Ozigbo. I don't think I've seen a run. Even people try to act like Mills was like, it goes Christian Okoye, Dedrick Mills, Barry Sanders, Jim Brown. Jim Brown couldn't dream of being Dedrick Mills.
We had a lot of conversations. The paper loved Mills.
Well, Sip loves big. He likes, I like Jerome Bettis.
He wants
Earl Campbell. He likes big backs. Yeah. But I was never as high on Mills as everyone else was. I think you were with me. And then the other problem with Mills is he was hurt all the time. He was hurt almost all last year. But I guess my point is, I haven't seen a run.
Yeah.
I can't, and maybe I'm just forgetting, I can't think of a run a running back has made, other than Wandale when they would have to bring him back there, that was like, damn, like broke a guy off, broke a couple tackles.
Wandale's made a couple runs.
Name another running back.
Washington had the one against, I think.
Mo had a couple. Mo was the N1 mixtape.
But he didn't run between the tackles worth a damn. No. And he was a skinny guy.
Every time he got hit between tackles, it was like time of death, second quarter, 7:15. I mean, it's what it looked like. He was a toothpick. But I forgot. But Maurice Washington had a
time
couple,
of death.
Time of death. Fourth quarter. 10 minutes left in the game. But that's what it seemed like. I guess what I'm saying is they need somebody. Not asking for a mirror. Be sure it'd be great. But they need someone that makes a couple of runs that are like, whoa, man. You know? I mean, even when we watch these Husker Classic recaps, Damon looks exponentially better than any guy on the roster. Like by 1,000, right?
That's the thing. It's like he was a running back that got on the field for a national championship team. That's the level. We need to get guys of that caliber just to to take the pressure off Martinez. Got to have somebody.
So, okay. It's been an interesting spring though, because Marquise Stepp has to have surgery, misses all of spring. Yeah. I kind of I don't know. I mean, in my mind, I kind of turned the page on Stepp, but he kind of seems like he's gotten his foot healthy. He's had a decent camp. Sevion Morrison was he hurt in the spring too?
He was hurt for a while. Yeah.
He was kind of quiet in the spring, but then and then Gabe Irvin had a good spring, but then now in fall camp, it sounds like Sevion Morrison has made some noise. Marquise Stepp is healthy and practicing. And then Gabe Irvin has continued to be solid. It sounds like it's those three guys. And you heard Frost talk about a Big Ten media days that they want a bell cow guy. They want a dude that can shoulder the load. I don't think they want to do a running back by committee thing. Ideally, who are you guessing is the guy?
Well, and I seriously have no idea when I say this, but if you were to ask me, I have to pick one. I think it's going to be a committee, but you're saying who is going to be the starter and who's going to be the guy. I think Sevion, if I'm reading between the lines from what everybody says, you just hear comments. It sounds like he's got the most talent.
Right.
Like the guy that you're like, he can do the next level things the best.
Right.
Break big plays, make people miss. Instincts, right? I get the sense he has that. So I would probably start there.
You're getting your Sevion game.
I would say Sevion.
Gabe Irvin. That in my mind the whole time it was going to be. I actually think Gabe Irvin looked okay in the spring game. Yeah. He's got a little bit of it. I like his running style. But I'm with you. There's something about Sevion that has started to come on.
He's trending.
Trending. But the only thing too is, as we now hit on everybody, don't forget about Stepp, because Stepp went to USC. Go to USC if you stink. And I mean, the guy had a big game against Notre Dame. Could you see Stepp starting early and then eventually Sevion, some one of those other guys, leaning on Stepp's experience early on?
My hunch is this is how it's going to play out. My hunch is that you got three guys. I think Sevion's going to get the start. I think Steph's going to be the power runner, and Irvin is going to be, I think they say he's the most complete back. Like, so you, I think he catches the ball pretty well. Okay. I think they're going to mix all three in. And like I said, my guess is on third down, you're going to see Irvin on
short yardage.
Or downhill. It's going to be Steph. And then Sevion's going to be this, the main go to. I think it's going to, they're going to rotate them all. Steph is going to be on. The issue is like almost like, I think Steph could be more of a factor later. I still think, dude, coming that off foot, a foot injury,
surgery,
I always
and all that
worry
stuff.
That like you're not ready to go.
Gotta be careful with the foot.
Yeah, too much too early, like you're gonna injure something.
You just better hope someone in a lot of ways, and maybe I'm crazy. Do you think I'm like, I feel like if they don't figure that position out, and again, we're not saying you have to find Jim Brown, but they need somebody to be serviceable, a little above serviceable at that
spot. If they could get two, then we really can rely on the run. Because if we only got one guy, then we have to really monitor that person's carries. Because otherwise, I mean, you know, anymore, who's getting 25 to 30 carries a game like they used to? Like, it's just not happening.
Yeah.
And so if we can split it up right now to keep these young, especially when they're young, man, it's like just to keep them healthy.
Real quick, what's Sevion's running style like? Any idea?
I think he's kind of got the slash. I've seen some just his high school, some of those high school clips, and he's got like
he's from Oklahoma.
Yeah, so he's
a four star.
He was a talent, man. He, you know, he can take it the distance. He's kind of a slasher.
So he's got some, like, he can, because the other thing we'll talk about later on, Nebraska needs to get some more explosive chunk plays.
Yeah,
he's got that in him.
He's got that. And Gabe's not maybe as explosive, but he's one of those guys. He played at a powerhouse school and he really understands the game, I think. And I think he's efficient. I would call that guy. He seems very, very efficient, especially for a freshman. He just kind of looks like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
I like guys like
that. But see, that's what Rex, I don't think, like, Rex jumped out. I remember watching Rex. God. Rex as a freshman just had this cool, calm, like, I can do this vibe to him.
They know how to play.
And Irvin seems like he's maybe got a little of that in
him. Let me just tell you something. When you're at one of those big state powerhouse programs, Rex was at, I think, Plano. Plano's. And this guy's...
Yeah. He's from Plano. I don't know if it's high school. I don't know.
I think he was at Plano East, maybe. Yeah. And these are huge schools. Same way this Gabe Irvin's from, I think, is it Buford, Georgia?
I don't know.
And, you know, it's a powerhouse school where it took him years to get on the field.
I know.
That's how good they are on that team, where they have D1 everywhere. And you have to know how to play the game.
Okay, last thing. First carry at Illinois goes to, you going your Sevy?
Sevion.
Okay, I'm going to go Gabe Irvin. Just to be different. Okay. I'll buy you a beer.
It's on, boy.
It's on. Okay. Wide receivers.
Ooh. Now we're talking, Nick Bob.
Well, okay. So wide receivers was kind of categorized in the running backs in terms of a position that has greatly underachieved. But the difference is for whatever reason, I shouldn't say for whatever reason, kind of makes sense. People feel way better about that position as the offseason has played out, whereas the running backs is still like, ooh, I don't know. So I guess I ask you this. Samari Toure, Omar Manning, Oliver Martin, Xavier Betts.
Upgrade.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Are you buying the perceived better upgrade on paper for it to translate on Saturday?
I don't know how, Nick, can it get any worse than our receiving core last year?
I mean, no.
That's my whole point. Like, you can't, for Nebraska, who is a, this is not 1991 where we're like, we are literally not trying to throw it.
But even like Abdul Muhammad's way better than.
Give him that.
Abdul Muhammad's nice with it. Kenny Cheatham, Wiggy with it.
That's how you win
you
national
get Wiggy
titles.
With it?
I would get Wiggy with it. But that's how you win national titles.
Right.
Like, you have a running team who has guys that like Reggie, like we were watching Reggie Ball
got game, boy.
He has game.
Yeah.
So that's the part we always discredit our, I'd say.
I would take Abdul Muhammad. I would take Matt Davison, Abdul Muhammad, Kenny Cheatham.
Even some of our later teams.
You know, you think like, because Nebraska threw like those receivers, they were like out there like, I know how to block. They were like, do you know how to do a post? You'd be like, no, I know how to block a safety.
Have you ever seen my cut block? I go after their kneecaps.
I collect kneecaps. That's what I do.
Oh, say a slant. So hold on. Kenny Cheatham, a slant is basically like a cut block, but you're actually going to turn and catch them. Like, okay,
I got you're saying I slant into their kneecaps into, when I block
them. So I go blanch that again. Like, no.
Catch the ball.
But that's how we paint these guys. They're like, they're like caught one ball a year and that was it. But
they're pretty good for the amount of times they got the ball thrown to them.
I mean, again, I feel like there's so many times these Husker Classic recaps take over my life, but like they're another, like Abdul Muhammad and those dudes were like, not bad, man.
Good, man.
They were not bad. Okay. But sorry. So you're buying the upgrade.
It's unquestionably an upgrade.
Yes. They're much better on paper. Is Teray the most important of that group? Will he lead them in catches?
Yes. I want to say in the paper today, or I was reading on somewhere, like they're starting to say he is truly a number one, like a true number one target. Like I think he's separated himself a little bit in that sense where we have one guy that we know is like,
right,
we can throw it to. And so I would say he's got to be the most important receiver.
Is he a deep, like what's his sweet spot?
At Montana, he played outside and he would go deep. We are using him in the slot position. So he's going to do way more underneath and way
intermediate
more
routes,
intermediate, like, kind of find the open pockets in the zone. Or, you know, you got the one-on-one, the slot, you got to beat your guy right on that route. You call a slant.
Yeah. Kenny Cheatham style, baby. But yeah. I agree with you. I think he's going to lead the crew. Sounds like Oliver Martin. I mean, Oliver Martin might be the highest ranked recruit coming out of high school of all those guys. And then his testing numbers for the performance index turned some heads a little bit of like, whoa, this guy's kind of a freaky athlete too.
What I would like to see from him though is, can he be a Westerkamp type where like Westerkamp ran good routes, caught the ball, like,
I loved Westy. I think Westy's one of the most underrated Huskers of the past like 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I would say that to me is what a ceiling for him looks like. I mean, he obviously is a good athlete.
If he's even close to Westy, I mean.
But, you know, like, I don't think Westerkamp
starts sizing the rings, Doug. Hey.
But yeah, I don't know if Westerkamp was that kind of athlete. But what I'm saying is like.
He knew how to play. He knew how to get
it's
open.
It's great that your vertical's 40. Like. I want you to get open and catch the ball.
Right. Cool. You got a fast 10-yard.
First things first, be good at football.
No question.
And then the rest is just great.
No question. Are we finally last year? I did my most important Huskers. I had Omar Manning on my list last year.
You've had Omar Manning on top of a lot of lists.
I will spoil my Omar Manning did not make my most important Huskers this year. I know.
What?
I should have gone down with the ship, Omar Manning ship.
You ride that.
I should have. That was my bad. But tell me, I mean, sell me on getting back on the Omar. I think he's going to produce. I guess. Is he?
He's going to play.
I was all in on that guy. I was ready to leave my wife for Omar Manning at one point.
Know this.
Yeah.
I don't think he had, you know, consistently practiced last year, and, you know, he had his issues and
COVID's a weird time for people.
He had COVID, injury, all the things that, you know, you got to do to stay out there. It was all going wrong. So, he's practicing all the time. He's playing. I mean, that's all you can ask. And he's got the size. I mean, we have a receiver that looks like an NFL receiver.
Looks like, and him and Xavier Betts look like, whoa.
I mean, Omar is going to allow us to do a couple things, right? So if you got Torre that is hopefully going to be our good route running, like primetime guy, number one guy, Martin to compliment, Betts can go deep. Omar can go deep and he can catch the slant in traffic and he's a big body, right?
Right.
So you can throw little slants to him and it's like linebackers hit him and they go, ouch, that hurts. That's what Omar Manning's going to give you, right? He doesn't need to run but three routes. Deep post, slant,
nine
deep post, slant.
Hurt a backer.
That's what he needs to do. And he can block. I mean, he's a big dude.
Okay.
So
now hold on. Let me go to my most important Huskers and erase.
Get him in there.
Okay. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of ways. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. But I'm with you. I mean, I for whatever reason, I'm buying that this group is going to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think this group on paper, like what you just laid out, but there's nevertheless, like, they need to be. I mean, the receivers last couple of years have been.
It's an upgrade. The more they surprise us, the better we'll, like, our season could go from okay to, like, a good season, depending on how good those guys are and how much they develop. Because if they're good, this offense could get moving, right? It could really get moving. And we haven't seen that. But besides those flashes in 2018, really, we've waited two full seasons with no receiving core that we could really count on. So we don't know what this offense can do unless we see some receivers making some things
happen. I just don't think people understand how. And I'm not trying to, like, crush people. Like, I don't think people understand how bad the wide receiver core has been for a year and a half.
I mean, compared to the rest of the conference, I mean, it's just, you hate saying that because it's like, there's a lot of good kids out there working hard. And I hate ever saying something's not good enough, but, like, we're just talking about, like, the reality, like, it's
the results on Saturdays.
If you want to win in the Big Ten and you throw the ball, like, there's a baseline of, like, talent you got to have.
Right. And it wasn't there. The reality was, it just wasn't there.
No.
Tight ends. We keep on bringing up SIP. SIP has called this, like, one of the best units in college football, which feels kind of like, whoa. I mean, I'm high on that. You got Vokolek, Austin Allen. I think Austin Allen's got potential. Yeah. What are you, real quick on those guys? I mean, is there tight end Kool-Aid in that glass right there? Vokolek juice.
I guess here's my those
Don't
guys.
You dare go pessimistic,
like,
on me. Sorry. Okay, I could feel it in the tone of your voice. Don't you dare.
I love all tight ends. Yeah,
Don't you dare.
I guess here's my only gripe with the
label of one of the best units in.
Yeah, I'm just like, usually it's because of last season. Like, right. I thought Austin Allen
had, like, a good catch on the sideline against Iowa.
Yeah.
And, like, other than that, I can't really remember. Like,
yeah, I just think it's a little bit soon for that sort of, like, I don't doubt that they're good. I don't doubt that these guys are pros even, but to me, it's like, the production from the year before usually has to precede the
label.
You're one of the best. Like, if you were the one of the best last year, then we'll put you at the top of the heap, like, for the whole country. But, like, I think we were still just like, we were okay last year. We weren't great last year.
I mean, Austin Allen had 18 catches for 236 yards and one touchdown.
That's okay.
That's not bad.
And he made some good catches. I'm just saying, like, he wasn't our guy until basically the end of the year. It was Jack Stoll first, and then it was supposed to be Vokolek. And Allen kind of, like, he kind of played himself into, like, becoming a real guy. And Vokolek, I think he looks like a really good athlete, but yet I just haven't seen it all come together. So I'm high on these guys. I just think, before you start saying best in the country, like, you got to be already there.
Book. I'm with you. By the way, we should mention Thomas Fedoni, if people don't remember, hurt in the spring.
Yeah.
He's not. His timeline was like,
it'll be
maybe it's a maybe. Year, yeah. Okay.
I think, remember, freshman too.
Yeah. you're trying to get the English 120.
We always do this where we're like, yeah, he'll just come in, you plug in the freshman, and they're, they're going to be an All-American. It's like, well, you got to go to class first day and figure out where the dorm is, and it gets a lot harder than you think, so.
Well, it's funny. It's not funny, but it's funny. Tony can't find his dorm.
Which way? To the Union? Wait a minute. It's that one. Oh, I missed practice. Oh, God. I mean, that's freshman year. So you want to be an All-American? Let's not count on freshmen to be All-American. They don't know how they get to the Union. That's harder than anything, so.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever laughed at. I got tears. Man, it is 60. These lights are like hot to the mug.
Commit a crime? You're like sweating.
I don't know where I was that night, sir. I need my lawyer. The O-line, real quick. I'm excited to watch Juergens play. I mean, like, he's kind of been a polarizing lightning rod guy, too. I mean, in some ways, kind of been like a microcosm of like everything, you know? Like, but the snap things, like, it's not just the thing with his snaps. It's not just the ones that go above his head.
Yeah.
It's even like, go watch a game. One out of every two snaps is errant, even the ones that aren't over his head. Like Martinez, this is another thing he's got to think about. You're reading things, guys, you know, a backer's walking up. You're trying to figure, like, the last thing you need to worry about is where the hell is snaps coming from? I'm just like, I don't want to put too much on this dude, but like the snap stuff's got to. Is he that talented, though? I mean, people act like they're like.
So when I look at him,
Jeff Saturday's like, look at that boy.
Well, I'm just saying, like, Jeff Saturday is a Hall of Fame center, probably. But he doesn't have Cam Juergens, like athletic ability, probably. Right. But, like, he was a great football player. Like, Cam's still, I think, learning the nuances. But, like, he's got all the tools.
Right.
Like, to be an NFL center, like, you just look at him, you go, God, that guy's got it.
And it's he really does. It's still crazy to think that that guy never had played a snap of center his entire life.
But that's where the snap stuff shows. And, and I was a supporter
of... Oh, you've been all in. You've been on the Cam Juergens train.
But because, remember, the big argument was, you got to yank him. And I go...
I think I was team yank him
Yank that guy out of the game.
I was going to give him the heave ho for a little bit.
You were,
it was after the Iowa game.
Yeah,
I was at the Apollo. I was like,
my argument was with such little depth,
that's the
had no choice.
And it gets to the point where, like, if you can't get the snap right, I mean, what are we talking about?
It is, but it's like he was a weird conundrum with no depth. It's a real talent. I really think he's a real talent. If he ever puts it together, he really is an all-conference guy, a pro. I just think that's the part where it's like, I think as much as it's painful, and it was painful to watch those snaps and to ride it out, I think riding it out still is like, I still think it's the right move. It was painful, though.
Because we talked about it where Scott Frost, he highlighted the offensive line as a potential strength for the team at Big Ten Media Days, which was exciting. We feel good about that. I mean, like,
I feel okay. I still think the tackles who have a ton of potential are still young.
Yeah, that's why.
I think in the end, you got Juergens, who I have confidence in. The guards will do all right. But if those tackles, once they develop, I think that's when it'll be like, okay, we're really. But I think they'll be okay.
It's weird. I'm not sure there's a position group that I have less of a feel for. Like even the ones to the bad or to the, you know, like, I don't like the running backs. You can be like, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
They got to go, like, the O-line. I would say you go all through all of them. I don't have a good sense for how they're going to perform at all.
I think they're going to be solid.
I
would say in the end, are we going to be better than last year? I would say probably, but not by that much, just because we lost an NFL guy on the left side, but
right.
We should be able to fill in pretty well.
We are going so slow here in this, and this is my bad. I'm not doing a good job driving the train and keeping us moving here. We're on the interstate going like 25 and people are like, go speed it up. But a couple more things we talked about it real quick. Need more explosive plays, need more chunk plays. This isn't an offense that's meant to go 14 plays, 72 yards. Like, it's not meant to have the 12, 13, 14 play drives. It's more of a 4, 5, 6 play drive. You need explosive plays.
Yeah.
They need to do better at that. Red zone offense got to get way better. I mean, this, they've actually moved the ball between the 20s relatively well.
Yeah.
They just haven't been able to put points on the board and they get inside the, into the red zone. Obviously, need to get more buttoned up with the penalties, the discipline, the organization aspect of it. We'll get more to that in a little bit. But the one thing I wanted to ask you is, do you think there's a chance that things were, are gonna look a little different? Like, is it going to be slowed down a little bit? It's going to be like, are you going to alter how you do things because you kind of have a defense that's that could kind of lead you and you don't want to maybe have offensively do some things that don't put your defense in the best position to lead you? Do you think it's going to look a little different?
I think you're going to see some wrinkles that are going to be a little bit different. But I wouldn't say that the main, like the meat and potatoes,
cooking meatloaf. Yeah, I like what you're talking about.
The meat and potatoes are going to be the same. You're going to have a couple different side dishes that are going to, we're going to feature. Ooh, kind of rolls are those? Crescent roll, huh? Okay, what?
But hold on. But we're still
corn here.
But the plate's still going to look the same, though. Like, I guess
the
I'm
meat
trying
potatoes
to
potatoes on the plate.
Because I'm just curious on how. I mean, because I thought there was a little nugget from Greg Austin in the spring about trying to slow things down a little bit for his linemen and all that stuff. I don't know. Yeah. I'll be interested to see what that looks like.
I don't foresee us becoming a slow the tempo down team. I think we'll still be up tempo. I think what we'll do is have a little bit more awareness to when we need to be a slow it down moment, right. But it's going to be, for the most part, I would say somewhat similar.
Defensively, let's go to the other side of the ball. I've made the comment that I think this has a chance to be one of the 5 best defenses in the past 15 years. Like, I don't think it's not as good as 09, not as good as 10, not as good as 06. But I think it's in that like 2011, 2012 type defensive range. For me, I told you what gives me the most confidence in this group is you finally have older, experienced players that have been in the same system of continuity, whether with the same calls, the same coaches, the same position coaches. For now, for some of these guys, they're going on their 4th year of it.
Yeah,
that makes a huge difference. Because the more comfortable you are, the faster you can play, the more plays you're going to make. Obviously, the strength of this team to me, the defense is a secondary. I guess how confident are you in the defense on a whole, and what would be the main reason that gives you confidence?
Everything you just said. They've been around a long time. They played a lot of football, and these guys are older. They really are. I mean, we got super seniors. And to me, it's like the game always slows down when you've done those like 3-4 years worth of, like, I got real reps for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Like, these guys have been the 1 and 2 deep for 3 or 4 years. I mean, that's a lot of reps.
Yes.
And so they're going to go into these off seasons and these fall camps knowing what to do. So then they just get good at it. And then they start thinking the next level. It's okay. Now I'm recognizing formations. I can actually focus in on Illinois, not just like, where do I line up in a 4-3?
Right.
And then they shift. Where do I, like, that's what you do your first year.
Right.
These guys are past that. And that's the stuff that it's only a benefit.
Not only do you do that your first year, you also do that the first year sometimes of a new system.
Yeah.
So even it's not necessarily about being a freshman or sophomore. It's about when you get a coaching change and you got a whole all new checks, terminology, all that stuff. Like, all these guys, like, they are advanced in what they're trying to do. And I think that experience is just something that's going to really serve these guys well.
Yeah. I think we have the strength to hold up in the Big Ten. I think our guys are there in the D line. Like, they're strong enough. Stilley, Robinson, Daniels, and Rogers. And DeAndre Thomas got named captain, which tells you where he must be.
Right.
So we got 5 guys in the D line that we feel like can play on this level, right? And then a couple guys past that even. So from there, it's like everybody else has got to be able to do their job and make a couple plays. Like they got to win some games for us. And, you know, I think we're in a position to do it, but they still got to get it done, right? In the end, you got to
go do it. I think because that's one thing you went there. I wrote down that I feel like, you know, a couple of years ago, there was that line after the Iowa game in the first year of we don't look like Frost would say, we don't look like those guys.
No,
like I think they're officially, and Jason Peter told me this. He was like, our guys are officially like the frame and prototype that you want in a D tackle. Like they're there. So physically, I think these guys are ready for that on the D line.
Yeah.
What about the linebackers? I feel like it's too bad Honus is hurt. But it feels like it's the best. These are the best linebackers since Frost has been here.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
well, I mean, how high? Because we got Reimer, Henrich. I mean, I feel like you. You call him Kovalarik, and I don't feel like that's his name.
That's not his name?
Kolarovic? Kolarovic. You throw a V in there early, and you've created a mental block. Kolarovic? Kolarovic is how I would say it.
COVID-19.
Let's just go with Kovalarik. Let's just stick with that because that's what you've been. But okay, so talk about though. How good are these dudes?
I mean, Reimer is a really good athlete and he's a splash play. He can fly. He can really run, right? He can run and make plays. I mean, we saw it every time he got in the game last year, he'd fly around, and make tackles. Yes. I mean, he just made plays.
He's got a nose for the ball. He just gets there. You know,
he gets there. He kind of, the term for him is eraser. He's fast enough to kind of erase other mistakes out there. And then Henrich, I think is just a solid. He's a football player. Right now for me, these guys are, I think they're really good, solid players. The issue is going to be, can they stay healthy? I just worried that these guys haven't played a full season before without being hurt. And I want to see these guys take care of themselves and find a way to stay on the field.
How good is Henrich?
I think
because he's one of those guys too. Like you read between the lines of what people say. There's a little bit of like, ooh, what's going on with this guy?
He's a guy that he's a football guy. I mean, he's got talent, but he really loves it. And I think he's got that as a coach. He's a guy you're like, thank God we got a guy like that.
Right.
He's one of those guys. And I think he's got all the tools. I mean, he's got the size, he's got the skills. It's just, can he stay healthy? He's been hurt a lot.
Right. And then on the outside, I mean, you got the ultimate warrior, Garrett Nelson, who got a black shirt.
Cue the music.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, I think your brother handed Garrett Nelson his black shirt.
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. Which, side note, did Cam Taylor Britt, he wasn't, Trev Alberts gave Cam Taylor Britt his black shirt, and Cam Taylor Britt wasn't sure if that was Trev Alberts, that like he wasn't sure who Trev Alberts was. And, like that's so bad on so many levels. It's like Trev's one of the greatest defenders in black shirts in Husker history.
He's
your athletic director.
Cam's been focused on football, Nick.
I mean,
Nick,
I feel Cam's like, been feel very, like his black shirt.
I actually went like back, it. Sat He's down, very focused.
Went back, sat down, turned to Deontay Williams. Was like, who is
this guy?
The hell is that guy?
It's weird. Does Trev not look like
Trev? Trev's got the, like, I want the perfect part. And like, it's almost like he like places it on his head and he has like the suit on and he kind of look, you know, he doesn't talk like a guy. Now he doesn't carry himself like a guy that used to just that sack Charlie Ward in the national title game three times. You know what I mean?
So eat raw meat. And
like Jason Peter's still out there. Just like
I actually watched it. He goes, 99,
get up here. You know, Jason has
He couldn't say his name. You can tell 99.
Like, you can tell that Jason was, you know, had that.
It's like, I'd like to excuse myself. And he goes in the room and just
punches a bunch of stuff. But what about Fildarius Payne?
I think Payne's been good. I think he's a guy that's going to play a lot.
Okay.
Caleb
Tanner. So I wanted to ask you about those
Tanner
two.
Tanner got a black shirt, which tells you he must be doing something right, because that means that it's Garrett Nelson and Tanner, or they're considering there's two starting like outside rush guys. Obviously, JoJo's doing the nickel.
Right, I was going to save JoJo for last.
But basically, those three guys, they got those two got black shirts, which tells you like that means they think especially I knew Nelson would get it because he's kind of he's the guy that I think they trust to go out there and just like play football.
Knock heads.
But Caleb Tanner, I wonder if he's made any improvements with the pass rush because that tells me maybe
gonna ask
he has.
You, I was going to ask you, is he a candidate for potentially filling that hole of need someone to get after the quarterback? Maybe.
So unfortunately, I haven't got to like watch.
Is that where a lot of the
live.
Is that?
So between Tanner, Nelson, and Payne, right? These are our three outside backers that we would put at D end to rush the passer. JoJo's going to blitz, but he's not going to defensive end, right?
Right.
So these guys will knock down, play defensive end. One of those three guys this year has to be a guy that can get sacks on just straight four-man rush. That has to happen. Is it going to be Tanner? Is it going to be Nelson? Or is it going to be Payne? How, like that to me is like, you want to know what I'm looking at on defense? Those three guys, who's going to step up?
You just got me excited. That was a good, they did that. You delivered that well. That was good. No, but that's because so that's where the sacks are going to come from.
I mean, you got Stilly, you got Ty Robinson, you got Snacks. Snacks is a captain.
They got to tell Snacks that the quarterback has snacks on him. And he's like, hold on.
That dude's got Starburst in his tucked in his thigh pouch. Pad. Yeah.
And give me
pouch.
A snack. Snacks. He's got a snack for you. Go get it from
him. Go get him snacks.
Okay. But do you think the sacks, why don't you throw JoJo in there?
Well, I mean, he's going to be playing on the nickel. So right? he'll rush from a blitz, right? Okay. Like I'm talking like,
but JoJo's kind of a playmaker too, you know?
Yeah. So part of what I think we do when we can't just rush consistently is we call more blitzes and JoJo's, he's in the 1A for who we send in a lot, JoJo, right? So JoJo's he's going on blitzes a lot. You know, Reimer's good at that too. We've had to do that because we can't just say, Chase Young, go off the edge, make a play.
Randy Gregory.
That's what you, that simplifies a defensive coordinator. When you don't have that, you got to be a little bit more creative and you got to take more chances with your blitzes.
But don't you think we talked about this a little bit, like the older you get, the more experienced you are, the better you get at blitzing?
Sure.
And you played football with me. I've never blitzed a quarterback. I was a C-21 safety. I was retreating on the
and my dad would be yelling, Nick, Phil
the run!
Phil the run!
Phil the run! I'm like, yeah, I'll get there.
Nick was always going back looking for but you led the league in picks.
Oh, there was a no-fly zone for me. You were not going to throw it on me, but I was not eager to stick my nose in.
My dad will never let that down, that Nick was just... He was deep, guys. Let me just tell you, he was deep in coverage a lot.
When I was a sophomore, at Southeast, before I got officially moved to quarterback, they put me at corner, and
you had the gloves.
Coach Miller, who was our defensive coordinator, said, "Are you? If there's a toss sweep your way, are you gonna come up and stick your nose in there?" And I went, well, and he went, get back
get
on offense.
Out of here.
I didn't even, I just, not even the fact that I didn't unequivocally say yes, I went into like,
let me think about it.
It depends. What kind of a running back is this?
He
what
did
are we,
you a favor there.
Oh, there's
he
no
just
question.
Saved you a couple of years.
There's no question.
Pretending you won.
There is no question. But the reason I brought that up is I'm a basketball guy. Is blitzing on the back end a little bit like, you're blitzing the post, you're blitzing a ball screen, and you got to know how to how you're rotating on the back end of it at a high level. Is that similar at all?
If we have to
speak this my analogy, language.
If I have to make an analogy to basketball, yes, I would say like a trap. You're right. You're trapping and you rotate, right? That's the same way you blitz and
so I'm saying,
you're rotating coverage, right?
Right?
So everybody rotates on a zone blitz, but sometimes you do a man blitz, right? So sometimes it's
right.
So there's man and zone blitz. It just depends on how you
do. I'm just trying to understand. Again, I'm on this experience train, and I know that like the first time we got taught to trap the post at KU, when I think about that compared to how I was then my senior year, with like you're night and day with understanding, anticipating, reading where you're going, talk, all that stuff. Like
that all transition.
So I guess what I'm getting at is you can feel, even though they're probably gonna have to send blitzes to get home, you have an experienced back end that's gonna be a little bit smarter at how to cover up for those things.
Yeah.
Am I on the right track at all with that school of thought?
With the,
or is, does Kobe Bryant and LeBron James and Doug McDermott and everybody, or do I need to stick to basketball? I mean, hashtag stick to basketball.
It's hilarious that you bring it all back to basketball, but I'll give you that, the part about communication and getting better at knowing your schemes, right? So the better way to put it would be is every single defense has a weakness. And the more you're familiar with your own defense, the better you get at it. Like understanding that, you give what you can give and you rally. If they know your defense and choose the right thing, good for them. But like you learn how to cover up, you know, those weaknesses, sure, of every defense. You, okay, just know more.
That makes sense. Yeah. That's kind of what that you said that better in football terms. That's kind of what I meant.
It's like, let me tell you something, Nick. I play tennis.
Is that blitzing the net?
It's blitzing the net.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Okay, terrible. But so we talked about the defensive backs being the strength of the team, led by Cam Taylor-Britt, probably the best player on the team. I mean, do we feel like on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being as confident as you can possibly be, how confident are you in Williams and DeSmuke and Cam Taylor-Britt? And
pretty confident. I mean, I'd say a solid 8. Just, for me, it's depth. I think they're solid one. You know, their ones are solid. I don't know if I trust the twos right now. I don't know the twos well enough. So I just hope everybody stays healthy. I think if we stay healthy on defense, we should be okay.
There we go. Okay. But obviously it's still a big pass rush, forcing turnovers.
Yep.
Those are the two things can go hand in hand too. But those will be the things to keep an eye on. The other special teams real quick. Anything we're missing on the defense, by the way?
I think we got it.
Okay. Yeah, special teams. I mean, because there's kind of been three things that have gotten headlined for what Frost and the guys have been working on and try to correct. You know, you got special teams, you got, you know, penalties and discipline, then you got, you know, turnovers, taking care of the ball or forcing turnovers. With special teams, like, I mean, you got to have someone that can kick a touchback. No more kickoff returns for a touchdown. They need a real threat at returner. I'll be curious to see who's back there for both kickoff and punt. I think
Cam Taylor-Britt's doing punt.
That's what I thought. I thought I heard Cam Taylor's doing punt. I haven't really heard anything on a kickoff return, though.
Yeah.
Punting, you need to be able to flip the field. You need to be able to pin people inside the 10, inside the 15. And then you need good players that can cover, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think with those three things, though, like penalties and special teams, this year feels like Frost has been able to directly show them where this impacts winning and losing. Because it's easy to dismiss a penalty. It's easy to dismiss a punt coverage unit. It's easy to, like, that stuff doesn't, that's not the sexy stuff with football that rises to what players think about. But I think over the years now, they've been able to realize just how important those elements are in terms of impacting winning or losing. Of those three things, you have the penalties, the special teams, and the turnovers. Which one are you most confident in improving?
So between special teams, penalties, turnovers.
Is one a quicker fix than the other? Others?
Oh, man. I mean, that's tough. That's tough. I mean, I think there's... I don't know if I have a good answer for that. I almost want to say special teams. Like, if you focus more on special teams, I can probably assume you're going to be better there. But like, sometimes penalties and turnovers, like, until you're in the game, I don't know. That's a tough. You'd say if you spend time in all of them, that should be the case.
Right.
But I don't have a great answer off the top of my head, like which one honestly feels like I don't know if I'm confident in any of that getting better, but special teams probably my first thing.
I hope so.
Seems like the emphasis has been obvious to me where right.
That's why I feel better about it. Like it seems like it's been much more of a focal point.
Yeah.
Throughout the offseason.
Like I'm thinking about turnovers and penalties. Like every year, every coach says that. What have we done different? I don't know. Special teams, I've seen the effort.
More time
the
on
focus
it.
And the kickoff thing. Like they are obsessed with getting a kicker that gets to kick the ball out of the end zone. That has been a fact. Like they have been working on that, harping on that. Now the penalties and the turnovers, I think we're emphasizing.
Some of that stuff's hard until you get in a game.
That's what I mean. Like it's.
But it's important. Yeah. I mean, it's.
I mean, you can do like turnover drill every day, and it's like, have we gotten better at turnovers from doing that? I think a lot of it's like you got to get there and you got to make plays, man.
Right, right. The other two things I wrote down before we get into the most important Huskers and then the game by game prediction. Winning close games going to be really, really important.
Yes,
because that's kind of told the tale of the Frost era so far, where Nebraska's 5-12 in games decided by one score or less. Like in some ways that's it right there. Like if they are 12-5 or 10-7, like everything probably feels different, but the ability to win close games is going to be massively important.
Yeah, that's been
is that go back to what we're saying with
those three things you just mentioned?
Right.
That's the story.
I mean, because this was from, you know, Chris Falica, the from College Game Day tweeted this out. In the last 3 years, Nebraska has lost 12 one-score games. Only North Carolina with 13 has more losses by one score in that span. So think in the Frost era, only one team has lost more one-score games.
That's the story, man. That's the story of why people are so frustrated, right? So the pessimists are having a hard time dealing with that, right? I think
right.
It's easier to understand blowout losses, blowout wins. Like we're really good or we're really bad. This is the in-between of like, why are we not winning those? Like what, like, and that's where we go down this road of all the millions of things that go wrong. But like, it's probably those three things, like turnovers,
penalties special teams.
And then it's 3 to 6 points a game, probably from
no
that.
Question.
We lose by three
no
to six
question.
Points.
And then, so it'd be interesting to see what that looks like. I got no magic thought on that, but like
yeah.
A lot, you go down the schedule, a lot of these games are probably going to be one score games.
I mean, we're with a tough schedule. If we win, I don't expect us to win by 20 against most of these teams.
I mean, really right now, I mean, you can write down two games that you would say like, they might win by three or four touchdowns, Buffalo and Fordham. Other than that, every other game, it's feasible. Every other game in the schedule is a one-score game. Think about that.
That schedule sucks.
It sucks. But the other thing that I wrote down before we get into the most important Huskers is like this team just, and it's why this Illinois game would be so important, is like this team has not been able to catch a wave yet of momentum, confidence, positivity. Especially given the climate around things right now, it's just that Illinois game is so important. It just would be really interesting to see what could happen if for this program and for this team, if they could catch some momentum and catch some confidence.
Yeah,
because a lot of that might be tied to some of the close games too.
Yeah, I mean we hit this on our last pod, but like Nebraska has not won three games in a row since Frost has been here. Think about that. Three games in a row hasn't happened. I mean, when you win three in a row, that builds momentum, confidence. We've never done that.
Right.
Think about that. To me is like, that's why the other reason why that's so important is like, man, we're building some momentum. The fan base, if we won three in a row, what do you think they'd do?
Yeah. They're going to get excited.
They're going to jump back on the like, oh my God, we're right. Starting to get there. Right.
Right. Right.
That's why it's so important. It's why Illinois is irrationally important.
Because it's not only is it important for the vibe from the outside looking in for things, but it's also important too, to your point though, of like also those, that locker room getting confident in those moments. Like it becomes when you're, when a lot of these guys are 5-12, they've lost 12 games by one score or less. You think they're confident in one score games? Probably not. No. I mean, probably not. And the only way to gain some comfort and confidence in those moments is to have some success in those moments.
Yeah.
And so that's what's just so, what's so vital about this, about the close games thing, is just not only do you want to win games, but it just, it builds the confidence. It builds that momentum. Huge, yeah. Huge thing to watch for.
Huge.
Okay. Five most important Huskers. In some ways, listening to you talk, I almost wish right now I could like hit pause and like redo my top five, even though I feel like ultimately my five are, I think if you talk to a lot of people, these five would be the five.
Okay, I'm going to give an honest reaction. So
give it to me.
I'm not going to hold anything.
What I was going to put this person at five, but I don't even know who to choose for one of them, but I'll get to that in a second. But for five, I put JoJo Doman. Okay. Five, I mean, he's probably the second. You can make a case he's the second best player on the team. You can make, he's probably the second best player on the defense. I'm pretty sure the World Herald in their camp countdown had him number one as the best player. Yeah, Sam McEwen, huge JoJo Doman guy. I just feel like whether it's I know he's not necessarily a blitz machine, but whether just this, he's a playmaker. They need that on that side of the ball. I think he is the fifth most important Husker. Your reaction?
You used a great term. He's a playmaker. He's our Swiss Army knife. It's a tough spot because he's covering down the field, like man to man, sometimes in the slot. He's blitzing. He's got to make open field. It's not an easy spot to play. He does it well. Super valuable.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. Everybody that knows my athletic background, you know, as a quarterback in high school, but you know, I believe in establishing the run game. And even more than that, I believe in establishing the Runza game. That's an original Runza cheeseburger, some onion rings, double dipped in a homemade batter, little bit of a pop to top it off. You know, in football, you establish a run. But at lunch, you establish the Runza. It's just that simple. So get out to Runza today and establish the Runza game, or check out the delicious salads. You got the chicken bacon ranch salad, sweet berry chicken salad, and my personal favorite, the Southwest chicken salad. You got to get out to Runza, establish a Runza game, or get a salad. Either way, you are going to leave satisfied. Runza makes it all better. I think I maybe should have said this at the start. The way I kind of thought about this is like thinking about at the end of the year, like if these five players don't have a good year, fill in the blank. Like that's kind of like, I just struggle to kind of see like if JoJo Doman doesn't have a good year, it's like,
He's our, like part of like, if you look on offense, you'd say this guy produces, like on defense, he's our splash play guy.
Yes. And so I just have like, if he's not playing well,
yeah,
that's a problem. All of a sudden this defense, who I'm actually kind of high on, they just don't have, they're void of, other than Cam Taylor-Britt, of anybody that makes plays.
Yeah, and I think he's stepping into a real leadership role.
Yes.
Which is important too. Like,
so, okay, I put him at five. At four, you could just put whoever the running back is. I put Gabe Irvin because I chose him. If like this is kind of a cop out, you could put Seve, just whoever the run. If you want to put Gabe Irvin, cool. You want to put Sevion Morrison, cool. Yeah. You want to put Marquise Stepp, that's fine. I know that's a cop out, but it's just so hard until you know who the dude is.
Yeah, the reality is like you put somebody else from the D line. It's like, well, it doesn't matter as much because there's somebody else you could fit in there and be like, the running back spot right now is like, it can't just be another guy. It has to be somebody that's like, performs
that. So yeah, exactly. You could, like, you can't put Ben Stilley because they do have Ty Robinson. They got snacks. They had, like, they do have other guys, you know. Yeah. Like, they need, Nebraska needs some running back to really, really have a good year.
Yeah.
I chose Gabe Irvin, but again, I know it's just insert the running back.
Okay. Yep.
Are you okay with that? Would you have put a running back in your top five?
No, because we don't know. We really,
but that's
haven't
just
seen
it though.
We just haven't seen anybody consistently like play that position.
But and again, this is all how you want to frame it. But that's why I put it, like, if fill in the blank doesn't have a good year, So like if, and you could just put in parentheses, Nebraska's running back doesn't have a good year. Guess what?
I think some of the listeners might be like, you didn't, they might say this doesn't count as the most valuable player because you didn't actually name a player.
Well, yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, I'll choose Gabe Irvin. I will choose Gabe Irvin, but that, I guess that's what's so hard about the running back. A running back to me has to be in your top five.
Yeah. It's just hard.
It's just hard because you don't know who it is, but it's just someone has to be there.
Yeah.
Number three, I put Cam Taylor-Britt.
He's,
it depends on how much you now think yourself.
He'd be two or three. He wouldn't be one. He'd be two or three.
Okay.
So I'm fine with that because I think he's our best defensive player.
Right.
And he's now saying he's going to return punts.
The other thing.
Like he wants to do it all. That to me means like this dude is going to be kind of the hardest to replace on the defensive
right.
and special team side.
But so you would have had Cam in your top five.
Yes.
And number two, I put Samari Toure.
Ooh, good call. Good call. Yep. Because I know who your one's going to be. So I think that's fair to put Toure two.
Just you got to have someone.
The receiving core, like we talked about, it's got to be upgraded. It is upgraded to a degree, but this guy needs to not just play okay. He needs to have his best season ever.
No question. And then at number one, I got Adrian Martinez.
We go how he goes.
Period.
Done.
Who's my biggest snub? Who, if you, who is on the outside looking in right now that you would have thrown in there? Is there someone? Because like I had Reimer and my honorable mention. I've had Reimer. I had Ben Stilley. I had Juergens. Damian Daniels. I had Xavier Betts. Is it one of those? The Caleb Tanner, Phil Dillard, Fredarius Payne, Garrett Nelson.
So that I'm almost like if you're gonna do a running back, I would almost say for me like that outside linebacker spot. It's like one of those three guys to me. You put right there with the running backs, like those two position groups to me, it's like, it'll tell you a lot about our year, how those shake out.
When you explained that, it was that little anecdote that you threw out there that made me want to redo mine. And I would have put in one of those guys.
Yeah. But the running backs, like it's similar boat, right? It's like, it's so unknown and so freaking crucial. It's just like, man, sucks that we just don't have like comfort there right now.
So I got number five, JoJo Doman. Number four, Gabe Irvin, but you can choose anybody, but Gabe Irvin. Number three, Cam Taylor-Britt. Number two, Samari Toure. Number one, Martinez.
That's all.
So are you okay with that?
I'm good with
that. We're still friends. We're still good.
I won't.
You're not going to
veto you in this.
Okay. One. Are we ready? We were almost 90 minutes into this thing here. You ready for the official game by game prediction of the 2021 year four Scott Frost Nebraska football season?
Fun note to remember, we did this three times last year. We did three pods because they kept changing the schedule.
That's true. I forgot about that.
And each time I think I predicted way too much.
I'm expecting you to have the most absurd. Homer. I know.
I'm realistic, but I'm a homer too. So
That's what's weird. That's what's weird about you. You are a very, very, I mean, everything we've said, you've been like, they haven't done it yet. So you're a very like matter of fact,
11
like,
wins,
show
though.
Me. But then when it comes to actual prediction, you're like going to beat every team, going to beat the brains.
Because
up.
If it's a 50-50 game, I think the way I would think, if I was playing for Nebraska, which is like,
you think
of course we're going to win.
Okay.
So I have a really hard time betting against us when it's like when they're Ohio State, I can go, okay, I think they're better than us.
Oklahoma.
They're more talent.
Right.
They're better football players. I think they'll probably beat us. I have a really hard time saying that, like, I think Minnesota's going to beat us ever for any reason, any day of the week. I just can't do it.
Well, again,
but I'm trying to be realistic. This is going to be real.
So here we go.
Okay.
Ready? Pen to paper. Here we go. Game number one at Illinois. I got Nebraska winning the football game.
I got it. Yeah. We're not starting with an L. We got to win this one. There's a lot on the line. New coach, new system. They have an old team, which I don't love that,
right.
But still they're learning a new system with a new coach. I got to give us the edge here, even though we're in Illinois. Like I got to give us the edge.
It's got to be a reason why Nebraska's favored by about a touchdown.
I mean, we laid a Tyrannosaurus Rex size egg.
Yeah.
No, doo-doo.
Oh, doo-doo. Doo-doo or egg.
You laid an egg, yeah. Because dinosaurs lay eggs, if you remember from Jurassic
Park. That's true. Dino DNA.
Dino DNA.
The Velociraptor hatching, of course.
Give me your
that
boy.
That was fantastic. Yeah.
But we couldn't have played worse against them. So I think that's good for this team to sort of have. I think whenever you can look to last year's tape and remember how bad you were against a team.
They were terrible.
Yeah.
Gave up a fake punt, turnover on the first play from scrimmage. Just bad.
Yeah. I think if you were to if we started a team that we kicked their butt or something, you just go, yeah, that's, they're going to be focused in on these guys. They'll know the matchups. I think some of the players, that's good. I think we'll be ready. It's a big game.
Oh, it's a huge game, man. The thing that's weird though, is it's funny how it's all how you like when Frost was in year one, everybody was pointing to the new system as they still got to learn the system. But when it's flipped and you're playing a team that's new, it's like, but we don't know what to expect. That's tough. You know, how it's just a matter of how you want to look at it. I still think the fact that you have, they're not going to be comfortable in clicking on all cylinders right away, but
no.
And I got to think that this staff trick plays trick look like they have, this is an all in, you got to win this game.
You win this game at all costs.
Yes. Now I mean, going on the road, first game of the year, you're never clicking on all. So there's a lot of things that are like,
so here's what's hard. Okay. And we're going to take way too much time on this game one, but we'll go fast from here. But this is a game. I think you even run Adrian maybe more than you need to, just cause you got to win it.
Yes.
But that's where it's you get hard. Cause we said, let's not run Adrian as much, but to me,
but you got
to
do what you got to do to
win. Win this game.
No question about it. No question.
don't hurt Adrian.
But win.
Got to win.
And I kind of feel good about it. I kind of feel...
I'm nervous and it's Tuesday.
I know. Okay.
I love game week, though.
I know. It's so exciting, isn't it?
But the butterflies...
It's good. Fordham, win. We don't need to spend... I mean, they're FCS school, they're bad. Buffalo, that game was looking a lot more... potentially nerve-wracking until they had their head coaching change. And I think they lost their star running back from a year ago, who is a really good player. A game that's harder than you think.
I wouldn't call it a layup. I think you got to still play it. You never know. These ones can be tough, especially since they've had some success the last few years. But W for me.
Okay, at Oklahoma, September 18th on the road, loss.
I think
the question is, how bad is it going to get?
Now, this would be the transformative win if we could ever do it, right?
Yeah.
If I'm putting my life on the line, I'm probably saying Oklahoma's going to walk away with it. If we could win three in a row with some serious mojo going into that game, I think that's where Frost is really. It's like the Auburn, when UCF had, they were rolling, they played Auburn in the Peach Bowl.
Yep.
It's like that. I think that's when Frost can really, he needs to get that going as a coach.
But that's also where, beating that, where the Illinois game's huge. Because more than likely, if you beat Illinois, you're going to beat Fordham and Buffalo.
Yes.
And then the whole vibe around that Oklahoma game is different.
Yeah.
Where you're walking in there, and I hate to use the term, you're playing with house money, but you kind of are. No one will pick Nebraska to win that game. You go there, you let it rip. And see what happens.
If 1 out of 10 times you win that game, it changes Frost's career.
Yes.
It changes the trajectory of this program. So to me, it's I don't think we're going to win.
No.
But I know it is a potential house money game where if you could get to the 3 wins, dude, swing for the fences. Like we talked about in Husker Classics, every fumble rooski, every bummer rooski, every black flash 41 reverse pass you can pull out.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you one more question on this game. Is there a better chance Nebraska wins or gets beat by 4 touchdowns?
Better chance it's a 4 touchdown loss.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
If you're going to Vegas, that's a better odds.
Right.
But I think it's still Nebraska in the right circumstance. This is the transformative moment.
You're 3-0,
I'm not betting that, but I'm saying that's not out of the car. So I wouldn't dismiss that either.
Okay, there we go. Okay, so have the Huskers starting 3-1.
Yes.
At Michigan State.
A lot of people are giving them L's here. I'd take the W on this one, actually.
I think Nebraska going to win that game. Mel Tucker obviously has some level of familiarity because of the the last Colorado-Nebraska matchup in 2019. Helps on some level where you're familiar with personnel, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I just think that team was not very good last year. They had a couple of games where they got up for it, but I think Nebraska's going to win that game.
Yeah.
Northwestern at home. What are you thinking there, pal? What do you think? It is October 2nd at home.
I'll take us because we're at home.
I think Nebraska win that game.
Yeah, I think we're on the road. I think this would be a pretty evenly matched game. I think you give us the advantage because we're at home in this one.
I think that is one of those games a year ago that you go back and watch, and it is just like, I don't know how Nebraska didn't win that game. Where, you know, the amount of times they had the ball on Northwestern side of the field, and they score 13 points.
Yeah, I mean, McCaffrey threw the ball to the guy's ball, head.
Hit the helmet at the goal line.
That's the stuff you just go. It's hard to do that when you think about it, but we found a way. And
Northwestern loses a lot of their, a good chunk of their core. I mean, they're replacing a lot.
Yeah.
I think Nebraska's going to win that game. So we have Nebraska starting 5-1.
This is called drinking.
But I don't think it's that crazy.
It's fair if you aren't totally pessimistic. And I think me and you aren't. We still like, we see what we see, and we feel like we know what we know.
It was like I said at the start. I'm leaning on resting in trusting experience.
I just like that nobody's been hurt yet. Like,
okay. What about the Michigan Wolverines coming to town October 9th?
Now's where I'm going to get real with myself.
Dang it. I got an L.
I mean, I'm with you. I remember us playing Michigan a couple years ago, just like
that was the Ohio State game day was the worst.
The Ohio State game day is worse. The Michigan ones,
the Michigan second. Was really bad.
Though. Minnesota is probably the third worst.
Those are the only games that really, really got away.
Yeah, they seemed. Michigan seemed like a far superior.
It looked like varsity playing junior varsity.
Yeah,
that's truthfully what it looked like.
There was a talent gap, and there might still be a bit of a talent gap, and I think we struggle when there's that much of a talent gap.
Although Michigan, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where Michigan's at during that time.
Their minds are
in an interesting place a little bit right now with kind of where there's a lot of angst around that program. Yeah. You know, Michigan, before they play that game, they're at Wisconsin the week before. They will have had played Washington in week two. So, I mean, they're potentially having two losses on the schedule before coming to Lincoln. Possible.
Yeah, I just don't love that game.
I'm going with a loss. Okay. Yeah. What about at Minnesota is the next one.
This is the one where the homer in me will not accept us losing to Minnesota.
Okay.
I just can't. You know, all my cousins are from Minnesota. My cousin played for Minnesota.
Yes.
So I can't go so
you're
on
going
this
dub.
Podcast and say they're going to beat us. So no, I'll go dub. I know you're probably
going
to go.
I'm going loss. I mean, as much as it pains me, because I think that Nebraska's ever bit as good. I just think on the road, this Minnesota's kind of had Nebraska's number.
The last 2 years have been, those games have hurt more than the other games because they kind of out-disciplined and out-wanted it from us. Like the COVID one, especially, where it was like, man,
they're down all those guys.
They were snapping the ball with like a second left in the clock. You just got to go, you know, that one hurt the way they did that to us in our own house.
I'm going loss. You're going win.
I'm going to win because I won't accept losing.
So that means I'm at what? I'm at 5-3.
I'm at
and you're at 6-2.
Oh my God.
Look at you. Purdue at home October 30th. Get your Halloween costumes ready.
Dub.
Are you dressing up as a win?
I'll be a giant W.
I'll be a giant W as well. I think they're going to win that game. And then what's crazy is, you know, you better have done your work, because now when you enter into the final couple weeks of the season, it gets tough.
Are we a bye week? Is it after Purdue? Would you Purdue, check that?
See, they don't hear. Let me pull it up, because that's still got the Southeastern Louisiana game on it. So that one's got the updated one. The bye week is the 23rd, the weekend of the 23rd.
October, yeah. So
let me pull it up here. But now, I mean, now the final three games are. So you got Purdue. No, you got the bye week in between Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Oh,
but you've had another bye. Don't they have another?
I thought they had one in October.
They do. They have a bye week between Minnesota and Purdue.
Okay, so that's where Purdue is a definite W for me.
Yes.
Okay.
So they have a bye week between Minnesota and Purdue, and then another bye week between Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Okay.
But so now we're into what is a brutal final stretch here. Your final three games: Ohio State at Wisconsin, Iowa. Ohio State at home, loss.
Got to go loss right now.
Okay.
Just don't think we're quite there.
I don't even think we need to elaborate on that game.
No.
At Wisconsin.
This one pains me because I think that this team is beatable.
I think they would have beat them last year. I really do. I really believe that. I think Nebraska would have beat Wisconsin a year ago, but that game got canceled. I got a loss. I just think.
I do too. I do too. And I don't like it, but I think. If I don't do this, then the record is going to be out of control. So I've used all the bullets in my gun with W's, and I need to throw a couple of L's in there.
I got an L, but then Black Friday, Iowa in Lincoln, Nebraska, Memorial Stadium. I have Nebraska finally getting over the hump and winning, beating the Hawks.
I do too, and I feel almost guilty because nothing about what we've done other than get close and lose 3 years in a row. Like, but I can't imagine us doing it again.
So hold on.
All evidence points towards that's what we do against right. Iowa, but I just think we've got to make a jump at some point.
Every game has been pretty close against Iowa.
It's a field goal or a touchdown. And it comes down to the last seconds and we blow
a big turnover, a big mistake, a big penalty. And that swings the game.
Mm-hmm.
But so hold on. Do you have the losses Oklahoma, Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin. So you have 8-4.
I got 8-4.
And I have 7-5. But what's hard is I'm actually there's a part of me that as much as we laugh at you, like there's a part of me that's wanted to take 8-4.
It's not
I
unrealistic.
Think if they can beat I mean you look at the games like Michigan, Minnesota, like those games are going to swing things quite a bit.
Yeah.
You lose both those games, you're in trouble. You split, you win both of them. I have Michigan and at Minnesota as both losses.
So here's what's hard. If we lose Illinois, I almost go if we lose that, then I'm almost like we're 4-8.
Well, that's,
you know what I mean? Like that to me, that's why like a lot relies on that game because I think it gives us momentum. It makes the rest of the Big Ten season feel like let's go for like half of those and we're like pretty much we're having a good seat. You know, we're going to be in a bowl game. We're going to be 6, 7, 8 wins. But when you lose that, it puts so much more pressure. Like I think it just releases some pressure. And I just like so
if you lose that Illinois game, there to me there's a ceiling for wins and it's probably like 6. But if with the chance of it really falling apart.
Yeah. Then it's like, you know, 3 or 4 potential.
But if you win that game, then 7 or 8 becomes like in the cards.
It's real.
Becomes a realistic thing.
The best part about this, though, is expectations are low. So people are thinking 3, 4, 5, 6 wins. It's kind of,
norm. But you know what's weird, though? Expectations are low. But pressure feels high. Isn't that odd? You'd think those two things would be at odds with each other. Like it feels like no one's expecting Nebraska to win a lot of games, but yet there's a lot of pressure on Nebraska to win games.
I think the pressure is on the coach.
Yes.
The pressure is not as much on the players in my mind. To me, it's more of like
it's a coach thing.
It's the media and fans starting to crank it up on the head coach
right.
versus like the, I mean, the, I don't know. I think the players are kind of in a spot where I think the expectations are low. I don't know that the pressure's high other than like, it's important for the team and the coach that first game. But I just don't think, I think it's low.
It's just
general.
It's just a weird combination of things there. But I got 7-5. You got 8-4. I want to make abundantly clear. Like, I think 8-4 is possible.
It's always, I mean, Nebraska.
That's what's just,
we've
like,
always been, you know, 7, 8, 9 wins a year. And that's like what we can do if we're just playing ball.
Isn't it kind of amazing, though, that you're truly looking at a team and looking at a schedule where like 8-4 is possible, but there's a way this thing could fall where 4-8 is possible.
Yeah.
But that also goes back to where, I mean, outside of Foreman and Buffalo, I mean, you probably feel like every game is going to be a one score game.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's going to be tough sledding through the Big Ten. And we don't know what we have offensively, but to me, it's got to be an improvement from last year. I think
the running backs are going to be better, have to be better a little bit. The wide receivers have to be better. I think there's been an added emphasis on special teams to where it cannot, I'd be stunned if it's as bad as it was.
It can't be. So to me, that's where I'm like, I'm excited to see this team. I'm excited for the season.
Again, it's people kind of look at you like they roll their eyes at you when you say that. Cause I've said that. I'm like, I kind of think this team's better than people think.
I like where they're sitting for the most part. Get through that first game, and I like where they're sitting.
Oh my God. So the next time we're going to be in this beautiful studio is going to be doing a recap pod for the Illinois game. And oh man,
I mean, that first game is always like me and you got so much to say and so much to let out. I can't wait for next week.
Oh man.
I mean, I guess it's what?
A couple days from now. Yeah.
5 days from now. So
what a huge game. Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's game week. This is fun. Hope people enjoyed the if you watch the video studio, of it, this is we're going to start doing more of this. We'll start to do wine pods. We'll have wine glasses, have some wine in here. We'll drink some beers, some whiskey. We'll drink whatever. But yeah, we're going to start doing more of this.
It's all on video now.
It's all on video. You and I are going to have to like dress halfway decent.
We used to do this in our underwear,
shirts off, pizza all over our face, you know, but now we're going to have to look halfway decent. But all right, man. Well, next time you're going to be in here, we're going to be talking about a win at Illinois. Let's do it.
A Huda Media Production.